the meeting on the internet now, and we're all ready to go. Do you have your motions in front of you, or do you want Commissioner Kramer to read those?
You know what? I can read most of them, but I understand that there were a number of additions late, so
that's right.
I can go before, and if you can pick from there, that'd be great.
Sure. Okay, you can go through which number, do you believe, Tony?
14.
Okay, 14, did you say?
I've got through 14.
Okay, fine. And then there's 15 and 16 that have been added, so Kevin will read those then. Okay?
Okay.
All right, good morning. This is Commissioner Susan Wiefald of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. Today is July the 30th, 2008. The commission is meeting today in the commission hearing room, 12th floor of the state capitol. With me today is my fellow commissioner, Commissioner Kramer, and by phone joining us is Commissioner Tony Clark. Commissioner Kramer, do you have any opening comments?
No, just welcome. Good morning.
And Commissioner Clark.
Good morning and welcome.
All right.
I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. SW1. I move the commission award contracts to Hanson's Excavating, Inc. for two AML projects, 2008 maintenance sinkholes 1 and 2, that involve sinkhole filling at several abandoned underground mines in western North Dakota.
Second.
Now, we had previously announced, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, that an intent to award these contracts. And so I'm not going to go through this in great detail today. This is for filling sinkholes near Beulah, New Leipzig, and Scranton, and also for filling sinkholes south of Noonan in Divide County. Everything seems to be in order, and I recommend approval.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. SW2. I move the commission issue a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, and notice of opportunity for hearing in the joint application of Cass County Electric Cooperative, Inc. and Otter Tail Corporation for approval of a service area agreement to establish locations for new electric service to be served by Otter Tail and Cass Electric within and in areas adjacent to the city of Castleton, North Dakota, case number PU08551.
Second.
Now, the issues to be considered in this proceeding are whether the service area agreement complies with Section 490306 of the North Dakota Century Code and whether the approval of the service area agreement and requested certificate issuance are compatible with the public interest. As you'll recall, Section 490306 of the North Dakota Century Code gives co-ops and investor-owned utilities a chance to come together on area service agreements for in cities and in areas which they both would like to serve. It gives them an opportunity to come together with an agreement rather than to fight about which load belongs to whom. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by September 10th, 2008. And if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. An informal hearing on this matter is scheduled to begin on September 10th, 2008, at 1:30 p.m. in the commission hearing room, where the commission will at the informal hearing, the commission will discuss this matter with the parties and any interested members of the public. Now, this area service agreement, some further information, it was approved by the city of Castleton at a meeting of its city council held on the 5th day of May, in 2008. One term of the agreement is that this agreement, if it's approved by the North Dakota Public Service Commission, shall continue in effect through December 31st of 2033. So it's quite a long area service agreement. And the map that they included is interesting because it shows the area around the city of Castleton. And it shows that the area to the north would primarily be served by Otter Tail Power Company, and that the area to the south would generally be served by Cass County Electric Cooperative, though there are areas of the city that show that that is not, it's not just north and south. They're intermixed to some extent as well. So the commission will wait to see if there is any interest in holding a hearing on this matter, and everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
SW3. I move the commission issue an intent to award a contract to Hansen's Excavating, Inc. for the 2008 Maintenance Sinkholes 3 AML project that involves sinkhole filling at several abandoned underground mines in Williams County.
Second.
This is a project. We originally solicited bids for three projects. We only received bids on two. Then we resolicited bids on this third project for filling sinkholes in Williams County near Williston. We only received one bid on this particular project, and that came from Hansen's Excavating. And their bid for these sinkholes three project is $22,750 compared to a staff estimate of $25,000. The commission is allowed to award a contract when there is only one bidder if the bidder is responsible and the price submitted is fair and reasonable. Our staff believes that's the case in this situation.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next, I'll go to Commissioner Kramer for his motions on the agenda.
Thank you. I just have one, KC1. I move the commission approve the notice of intent to award a contract for consulting services for siting applications, case number PU08115.
Second.
You'll recall that earlier this year, we, in response to the growing and urgent demand for siting energy conversion facilities like wind farms, perhaps some others in the making like gasification plants, as well as transmission corridors and route permits for both pipelines as well as electrical transmission, we decided that we needed to seek assistance for our staff because the load was getting quite heavy on staff and is and continues to, and we expect that it will continue to. And so we decided that we would put out a request for proposals, which we did in May, seeking proposals from private engineering firms who could provide assistance in analyzing some of the siting applications, perhaps provide some of the field work, surveying work, consult our staff, and then ultimately, of course, the commission. We also, of course, determined that management of these cases would remain with our very capable and qualified public utilities staff. Utilizing private contractors really does a couple of things. It negates, first of all, it does not negate our need for more staff, which we are requesting in the next legislative session. We have requested in our budget to the governor, and we all remain committed to that. But it does minimize the need to grow the agency as large as it once was, like in the last energy development boom when we had some 20 more people than we have today. It also allows us to do that work and have that oversight without diminishing in any way or compromising the integrity of our regulatory responsibilities. Using a contractor, we felt, a private firm, rather than adding people to the staff. It also just provides, I think, a better management of the economy of government. That is to say, the private sector can ride the cycles of development probably better and is more prepared to do that than government bureaucracy. As I said, we had many more employees a long time ago than we have today. We still need a couple more to provide the appropriate oversight, and we'll be seeking those in the session. But the other nice thing about utilizing a private firm, especially for siting cases, is that we don't have to tap any more tax dollars. We're able to utilize the application fees that come with a permit or corridor application, and not add any more to the tax burden. This particular RFP was received, it was responded to by two firms. The firm that we intend to award a contract to is Houston Engineering. One of the advantages that Houston Engineering had over ProSource, which was the other firm that responded, is that they have offices both in Fargo and Bismarck, so their proximity to our staff is preferable, of course, and is an advantage. Also, their engineering and environmental science backgrounds and emphasis fit the needs, we think, of our public utilities staff, especially as it relates to siting. So we're pleased by it. This is not a retainer contract. This is not there's not a fee to retain them. They are simply being, named as the contractor of choice and the consultant of record in siting as we move forward. The fee schedule is provided in the contract. It is based on the various expertise and qualifications of different staff members, and of course each contract for each case would be customized to meet the needs of that particular case. So everything seems to be in order. Good work done by the staff. Frankly, both proposals were very good. I read both of them thoroughly, and but I think we're making the right call today. I would add that the any applicant who does not receive the contract does have 7 days from the awarding of this intent to award a bid to protest if they deem necessary or would like to.
One of the issues that the commission looked at very closely was conflict of interest. So I'd like to read to you the conflict of interest statement that has been signed by this particular firm. Conflicts of interest generally relate to the potential for self-gain, usually of a fiscal nature. Potential for self-gain concerned to undermine the judgment or objectivity of a professional engineering consultant, such that the mission and dedication to providing independent objectivity is compromised. Furthermore, the appearance of bias may undermine the public trust in the Public Service Commission. A potential or actual conflict of interest exists when commitments and obligations to the Public Service Commission or to a widely recognized professional norms may be compromised by a person's or corporation's other interests or commitments, especially economic. This is especially true if those interests or commitments are not disclosed. Houston Engineering, Inc. will make regular, timely, and full disclosures to the Public Service Commission of significant interests and activities related to our consulting responsibilities that may give rise to conflicts of interest. Houston Engineering, Inc. further agrees that no employee, including principals, will be assigned to a Public Service Commission project when currently providing, preparing to provide, or retained to provide technical services or advice on behalf of a utility company or other client, or is reasonably expected to appear before the Public Service Commission on any matter that could create a real or apparent conflict of interest. Houston Engineering agrees to discuss with the Public Service Commission any matter that may constitute or develop into a conflict of interest prior to assigning staff to work on the project and prior to the Public Service Commission assigning any case to Houston Engineering, Inc.
The kind of the interesting thing about all this is probably the greatest strength Houston Engineering has is their experience in working on siting cases for companies. At the same time, that experience does present, if not a literal conflict, certainly the potential for the appearance of conflict. And so we appreciate their signing this statement. It's very well articulated. The separation of staff or the splitting of staff is not new to us. We do that within our own staff when we have to find sides, if you will, create sides to create that separation. One of the other advantages I would say to this is that in many respects, having engineering firms who work for the Public Service Commission will help the other companies who hire those firms perhaps provide better applications. So that may be one of the bonuses in having it, having firms do business on both sides while, as I said, maintaining our integrity.
Well, in my case, and I think Commissioner Kramer said he appreciated them signing this, but in my case it was necessary, absolutely necessary, that this be signed before the commission would do business with Houston Engineering.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That ends items in my portfolio.
Commissioner Clark.
Okay, I've got speakerphone, so if there's feedback or things like that, just let me know and we'll take you on. TC1, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08604, granting the request of International Malting Company, U.S. Division of International Malting Company, LLC, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to discontinue business at Wapton, North Dakota, effective July 28, 2008.
Second.
I should note that there are a number of motions here on the agenda. It's related to the fact that it is grain elevator licensing renewal time, and so that is why we've got any. In this case, licensing division received this request from International Malting for their malting at Wapaton. It's been sold to White Box Commodity Holdings Corporation, and their license application is pending.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC2, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08470, granting the request of Bush Ag Resources, Inc., West Fargo, North Dakota, to discontinue business Sutton, North Dakota, effective August 1st, 2008.
Second.
Resulting from a request, they've changed their business corporation to a limited liability company. There are no outstanding storage obligations. Bush Ag LLC has made application to license this facility itself.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I move the TC3, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08471, granting the request of Bush Ag Resources, Inc. to discontinue business as a facilities-based grain buyer at West Fargo, North Dakota, effective August 1st, 2008.
Second.
Again, this results in the change to an LLC.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The commission issued an order in case number GE08472, granting the request of Bush Ag Resources, LLC of West Fargo, North Dakota, to operate a 140,000 bushel grain warehouse at Sutton, North Dakota, effective August 1st, 2008. It's just the backside of that previous motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC5, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08473, granting the request of Bush Ag Resources, LLC to operate as a facilities-based grain buyer at West Fargo, North Dakota, effective August 1st, 2008.
Second.
Again, the second half of the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC6, move the commission issue an order in case number GE08516, granting the request of Hitter Grain Company, Lisbon, North Dakota, to discontinue business at Elliott, North Dakota, effective August 1st, 2008.
Second.
This is just resulting from the license no longer being wanted. There are no outstanding warehouse obligations.
Does anyone know where Elliott is located?
Near Lisbon.
Near Lisbon?
Near Lisbon.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I have not visited Elliott.
I haven't either. Mm-hmm.
TC7, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Polar Communications Mutual Aid Corporation for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for federal universal service support in the Gilby, Lakota, Fort Edmore, Adams, Pembina, St. Vincent exchanges in North Dakota, case number PU0821.
Second.
Second.
This is just a notice of opportunity for hearing. The work attached doesn't indicate it. I don't believe this has to do with Polar. It does actually.
Mm-hmm.
Merging its is with Polar Telecom, Inc. to operate as a single company, and so they need to reapply TC designation under.
These companies already have eligible telecommunication carrier designation because they've merged, as Commissioner Clark said. They need to reapply to do that again.
Right. Basically, what you had is number of cooperatives, purchase exchanges. Initially, they were operated as a separate subsidiary, and now they're bringing them into the full cooperative.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC8, I move the commission adopt the order approving an interim interconnection agreement negotiated between Mid-Continent Communications and United Telephone, case number PU08229.
Second.
This interim agreement will allow Mid-Continent and United Telephone Mutual Aid Corporation, operates in the northeast of the state, to provide interconnection and wholesale services to Mid-Continent Communication, at least on an interim basis. It's filed under Section 252 of the Telecom Act, and basically in its 252 application, the commission is looking to ensure that the agreement does not discriminate against a telecom carrier who's not a party to the agreement, and implementation of the agreement is not inconsistent with the public interest, convenience, and necessity, and in this case, we find that both are the case. These can go to operation just by virtue of a clock if the commission does not take action, but in this case, the parties wished us to approve it sooner than that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC9, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity to file written comments in the application for approval of an interconnection agreement amendment negotiated between Mid-Continent Communications and North Dakota Telephone Company, case number PU08578.
Second.
Again, this is just an opportunity to file written comments. You'll notice that we've had a number of these types of cases between Mid-Continent and various rural telephone companies. As a couple of things happen, one, Mid-Continent gets into the phone business, and as companies get into the cable television business.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. T TC 10, move the commission issue an order in case number GE08559, granting the request of the Avalon Grain LLC, Omaha, Nebraska, to operate as a facilities-based grain buyer at Carrington, Grand Fork, Jamestown, and Valley City, North Dakota, effective immediately.
I have a different number than that, Commissioner Clark. On mine, I have GE08583. Is this TC 10? That was changed. Okay, 10 and 13 were changed. Thank you very much.
All right. Go ahead with this motion.
Go ahead with this motion. Now we're on. Okay.
Gavilon has filed an application to operate a facilities-based grain buyer at these at the Carrington Grain Forest, Jamestown Valley City facilities. They've previously been licensed to ConAg.
All right. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC 11, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08560, granting the request of Buffalo Grain Company, LLC, to operate a 15,000 bushel grain warehouse at Tower City, North Dakota, effective August 1st, 2008.
Second.
Buffalo Grain Company, LLC, has filed this. They operated a grain warehouse at Buffalo before moving business operations to Tower City and are now licensing the Tower City facility. All license requirements have been met.
All in favor?
Aye.
I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08582, granting the request of Buffalo Grain Company, LLC, to discontinue business at Buffalo, North Dakota, effective August 1st, 2008.
Second.
And this is just the second half of that action.
All in favor?
Aye. Now, do you wish Commissioner Kramer to go with the rest, starting with TC 13?
Nope, that's fine. I've got 13 and 14.
Okay, go ahead.
I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08583, granting the request of ConAgra Foods, Inc. of Omaha, Nebraska, to discontinue business as a facilities-based grain buyer at Carrington, Grand Forks, Jamestown, and Valley City, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And EC 14, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08435, granting the request of White Box Commodities Holdings Corporation, Minneapolis, Minnesota, to operate a facilities-based buyer at White Box, Dakota, effective July 28, 2008.
You're dropping sometimes, Tony, but that's just fine. We've got the motion in front of us printed.
Okay, very good. Well, this is related to the first motion that I read regarding White Box and the White Box Commodities and the Wapton facility.
Okay, thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And I will let you take it from here.
Okay, there are two more related, similar to the ones you've already moved. TC 15, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08603, granting the request of AGP Grain Limited, Omaha, Nebraska, to discontinue business at Arvilla, Merrifield, Crystal, Valley City, and Larimore, North Dakota, effective August 1st, 2008.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 TC 16, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08591 granting the request of Columbia Grain International, Inc. of Portland, Oregon, to operate as a facilities-based grain buyer at Arvilla, Larimore, Merrifield, Crystal, and Valley City, North Dakota, effective August 1st, 2008.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 That ends the items on the agenda today. The commission does want you to be aware that yesterday we held hearing in New England, and that related to case number PU07169, the Basin Electric Power cooperative application to build a new 230 kV transmission line from Belfield down to Rame. And we had a really good attendance at that meeting. There's 105 landowners involved. They said that something around 90% have signed the easement agreements, but we had a number of the landowners who haven't signed easement agreements show up at that meeting to talk to us about concerns, et cetera, that they had. We were also the day before in Cooperstown. We held our hearing at the Cooperstown Country Club, and that related to the Empower case, PU 107. there's a number missing there. It must be PU08107. That has to do with both a new 230 kV transmission line in Barnes and Steele County, a 13-mile line, and the siting application for their wind farm, approximately 150-megawatt wind farm in that same area. At that hearing, we went through the hearing for the transmission line. However, when we got to the hearing for the wind farm, we opened the hearing. We had a little information placed on the record. The company wasn't quite ready yet to proceed with everything, and so we continued to the hearing to another date and another time and another place. So that has yet to be determined of when that hearing will be finished. And so that's kind of a status update of where we are with those two hearings that are before the commission. We have a informal hearing this afternoon at 1:30. Following that, at 2:30, the commission is going to hold a work session on our Director of Administrative and Executive Secretary position. At 2:30, we'll be doing that. Other meeting announcements are in the agenda today. Are there any questions?
What's the nature of the landowner objections or concerns or whatever you'd like to call them on the Belfield to Rame line?
Well, there were a number. Some people got up and they had not signed their easement agreements because of monetary concerns. The amount of money, they would rather have the money paid on a yearly basis, an amount paid to them yearly rather than in one lump sum. Other landowners had concerns about the way the line was going to be crossing their property. In some cases, it was a diagonal that was going to cross their property diagonally, and they wanted it to go along a particular lot, you know, the line, a section line road or a quarter section line road. In other cases, there were a number of comments from parties who said that although we have an avoidance area that the commission should not cite unless there's no possible reasonable alternative to go around the national grasslands, they wanted us to cite the land through the line through the national grasslands in western North Dakota. So we had a variety of concerns that were expressed by the public at the meeting. It was very interesting.
Is it one of your options to cite the power line through the national grasslands?
Actually, that would be something the commission would have to discuss very carefully, because our rules state that that is an avoidance area and that the commission may not cite the line unless there is no possible reasonable alternative. And the alternative that Basin has proposed requires the line to be 3 miles longer than it would be if it went through the national grasslands. The line itself is it 74 miles long? Around 74 miles long, to give an idea of the scope of that issue.
I think, too, Dale, it was a very interesting discussion related to the designated national grasslands, and it's an important distinction because much of that area is not federal land. It's designated grasslands, which is still private property. Our rules are very clear that it's an avoidance area and that the alternative would have to be, it'd have to be a reasonable alternative. And then it states several criteria for that, for those reasons. And some of them, frankly, could apply to this particular line, perhaps, but the burden is the other way. I mean, the point is to avoid it unless. I had great empathy for the landowners that thought this would be a better route. In many respects, it would have been. It certainly would have been a straighter route, perhaps a less expensive route, all of those things being possibly true.
They were concerned, many of them, because they would rather it didn't go near their farming areas or special areas that were important to them.
So the unless is not...
I would just add, there were also some concerns raised, and we've had this in some previous cases as well, where there may be a difference of opinion between the landowner and the tenant farmer who rents it with regard to, you know, where the placement of a line goes, the effect on agricultural operations, things like that. I would just say that the overall tenor, I thought, was very positive.
Oh, yes.
I didn't get the sense that there was anyone there who really was just opposed in general to transmission lines in the area. You got the sense that everyone felt that they could understand the need, especially with the growing load related to the oil industry in that part of the state. But there were very, I thought, constructive comments made about just concerns they have about placement generally.
And one man was concerned about that the lines in a certain situations can dip to a height of 26 feet, and he was explaining that his farm machinery can be 20 feet tall that he operates, and he was concerned about the potential for arcing between the lines and his power equipment. On the record, Basin said that they run a number of 230 kV lines in the state, and they have never had an incident of arcing with farm equipment due to the closeness to those lines. But again, it was a very interesting discussion, and I think the commission learned something more about the potential for accidents by the testimony and the responses that were given.
Well, just like everything, farm implements are getting larger, and as machinery gets larger, so does the need for perhaps having higher power lines and overpasses.
If you have a situation where you mentioned the landowner and the tenant, I mean,
yes.
If the landowner wants one thing and the tenant wants another.
Well, actually, in this case, the landowner is the one who signs the easement.
And did.
They already have. And so then we had the tenant farmers who were there giving their thoughts about the siting of the transmission line, which we appreciated.
I mean, what, frankly,
prevails?
We don't know.
What difference does it make what they think? I mean, if they're just renters.
I don't know, Dale.
It would be another area of law, perhaps, and certainly of interest to discuss and debate that particular question. It is a very interesting question. I'm not sure it's one that we could deal with in this case, but it is a relevant point.
It's the line 74 miles long. Do you remember how much it costs?
Yes.
$33 million.
And that includes a substation.
Sounds like
so
a bargain.
So actually, they were building the line, they told us, for $19 million. And there also involves two microwave towers are included in that price as well. So it's a considering the cost that we hear in some other places for transmission lines, if they can build it for $19 million, it would be a very cost-effective investment.
The service area agreement between Otter Tail and Cass County.
Yes.
Can two parties to an agreement like this make it as long as they want?
Well,
I mean, is there any restriction on?
I suppose that is one issue that the commission could take a look at, the length of the agreement. I'm sure that the city of Castleton already took a look at that when they decided to approve this agreement, but it is for 25 years. That's what the proposed agreement states.
And I believe that was the same in the Kindred one as well. It was a 25-year agreement, I think, between the same two companies.
Now,
does the agreement include the
maybe some overlap with other areas of state law in what the city itself can franchise for? I think City franchises themselves can only go for 20 years.
Now, does the agreement involve the ethanol plant?
Actually, you would need to take a look at the map and to take a look at where exactly the ethanol map, the plant, is located.
I'm sure it does.
I haven't analyzed it that carefully.
And I'm trying to remember, the Kindred agreement was between
the same two companies.
Same two companies, right? Yes. Uh-huh. And so, Otter, this is the second
it
municipal
is.
Agreement?
Yes. Otter Tail and Cass County Electric clearly have taken the both the admonition and the law seriously and have engaged in continued negotiations, which I appreciate very much.
So,
well,
here's
I-94. Yes. Cool. So, is it correct to say that there is no limit in the state laws to how long these agreements can run?
That's my understanding.
I don't know.
Tony, is that your understanding?
I don't know either way. I don't recall that there is a limit in the law, but I know that there are limits with regard to how long cities can franchise utilities.
Do you have any concerns about it being that long?
Do I?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have any reason to be concerned right now, but I'm open to hearing, if someone has comments on it, I'd be open to hearing the argument.
Anything else?
Sorry. I'm just so that I'm clear, the Bush Agricultural Resources changes were just made because the company is being organized now as an LLC instead of as a corporation?
That's what I understand, and I don't know if Sue's there or not, but
is here.
Yeah, I have not heard that's related to BEV merger or not, or if this was something that was planned, you know, prior to that merger.
Sue, do you have any comments you'd like to share about that?
Okay. That was one of the things I was kind of getting at. This was not influenced, to your knowledge, by the merger?
So you should speak into the microphone.
No, as a matter of fact, my contact person told me that after the first of the year, it's very possible that there could be a change again.
Okay. I was wondering, should a company, if it just makes a organizational change of this nature, should it be required to come in and get a new license?
Our law requires that if there's a change in the corporate structure, then they need to obtain a new license.
Whether they should or not is a question for policymakers.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
That's what the legislature has determined at this time.
This goes through then.
Right.
I was interested in, you mentioned the conflict of interest, the conflict of interest provision in the contract. I'm trying to figure out how that would work, because how is it that they don't know what they're really going to be working on, do they? And how does one?
Well, that is why we have this conflict of interest statement that we're approving, because as I read to you, they said that agreed to discuss with the Public Service Commission any matter that may constitute or develop into a conflict of interest prior to assigning staff to work on the project, and prior to the Public Service Commission assigning any case to Houston Engineering, Inc. Now, if the commission finds that it needs to have in the future any changes to this conflict of interest statement, we can work with the company on that as well. But this seems to be a very good start to a conflict of interest proposal, because they have committed to be very open with the commission in this about any potential conflict of interest.
To your point, to your question, it's every project would be a separate contract anyway. In other words, what we're simply doing is we're stating that Houston Engineering is the engineering firm of record for the Public Service Commission. They don't automatically have license to take every project that comes along. Each project will be customized, as will our contract with the company, because in some cases you might need a class one engineer, and in others you might only need a class three. You might need a surveying crew of three people in one case, and you may not in another case. And so in each particular case, the potential for conflict will be examined. Obviously, if it's a siting of a wind farm that Houston Engineering is actually the engineering firm on, that's a different situation than if it's the siting of a pipeline where they're not involved. And so each situation will be customized, and the conflicts and potential conflicts will be examined at that time.
Is there going to be a separate contract with the firm for each project they work on?
Well, there would be a scope. There would be a scope of work, because keeping in mind that each project has a separate application, and with the separate application is an application fee. So consequently, when we access those dollars, we would be accessing them for a specific contract and for a specific project.
Are they going to be being paid exclusively out of application fees?
Yes.
I see no reason why they wouldn't, yeah. And I do, by the way, both Dale and Dave, I have an extra copy of both proposals here for you to look at. There is a fee schedule, for example, that outlines the hourly fee for the various tasks.
But just so that I'm clear, in every project that they undertake, there's going to be some kind of written
agreement.
Understanding of the scope of that project.
Sure.
Is, and there also is going to be some discussion of whether there's a conflict of interest.
Yes.
That's exactly correct. But the reason we did this was so that we don't have to go through this entire procurement process every time we have a project. You will recall that this is similar to what we've done with KLJ and the Keystone Pipeline project, although in that case, it is simply the investigative piece, and it's just one project after the fact.
Who wrote the conflict of interest policy that they'd agreed to?
Alana Jeff Kotsacko worked on this.
With them.
How common is this?
Hold on, do you want to speak into a mic?
Sorry, how common is this to require a conflict of interest agreement such
okay,
as
ahead,
this Alana. In a, you know, garden variety commission project?
There's state conflict of interest provisions that apply to all contracting. And when the proposals came back and you're reviewing what kind of work they do, there were some citing cases in both proposals, I think, and potential conflicts in both proposals. So staff then follows up with how with the company, how would you handle this? And I think Mike's initial memo, he had followed up with both companies about how they would do it. And then I did further follow up, and it was drafted by both of us, basically. Houston and I worked on the language.
Okay. Just a couple of updates, if I could. Status of NSP, Xcel's Energy's ratings recently.
Yes, the commission is still receiving materials on that. I don't believe we have it down yet for setting a work session for that case. Maybe at the next meeting it'll be timely to do that.
Well, I don't think briefs are due until August 9th, I think. Is that right? Go ahead. Sure.
I'm expecting a filing of stipulation between the with the company and staff to extend the filing date.
Oh.
I haven't seen it, but it could be here.
Mm-hmm. And what about the advanced determination of prudence about Bixtel 2?
The commission held a work session on that particular matter this last week, and we gave some direction to staff as to how to proceed in drawing up the order. That will probably entail another work session by the commission once we see the language that has been then drafted by staff before we're ready to proceed. But we made a lot of progress at that first meeting.
And were any of the sinkholes that you found in May? Because they could be sinkholes to mile.
Probably.
Okay, Jim, were any of the sinkholes found in May?
No,
before that. Okay. Sorry. They can't be called that, sinkhole to mile.
Could you tell me what the informal hearing is about? It mentions numbering resources.
Yes, it does. It's with Quest. And let's see here. Bismarck Rate Center numbering resources. Actually, I don't have my paperwork with me right before me right now on that particular matter.
Are they running out of phone numbers?
What was the question?
The numbering resources question, Tony. Are they running out of numbers?
Oh, no. What it relates to is a request that, similar to that Statter Center request in Grand Forks, where there's a block of numbers that they're looking to designate to a specific customer. And under those New Star numbering resource rules, they have to get permission from the commission in certain cases to do that. So that's what it's related to.
Okay.
Is the power line, you mentioned the Cooperstown hearing about the power line and the wind farm, is the power line going to be built without the wind farm?
Well, actually, it's 13 miles approximately of transmission line. And I feel the projects are probably pretty integrated together. Because you wouldn't need a new transmission line unless you were putting up a wind farm. They were ready to go with the transmission line hearing. They had some more information that they needed to gather for the wind farm hearing.
I was just wondering, why would you have, if you had two aspects that were closely integrated and you weren't ready to go with one of them, why is it useful to have the other one?
Well, we were
yes,
there.
I think so, because they did have all their materials and information ready, and there were people who were attending the hearing who were interested in the transmission line. So it, I think it was appropriate for them to move ahead with that hearing.
Could you give me an example or two, if you may, if you would, of what would be a potential conflict of interest problem for Houston Engineering if it was working on it, or at least an issue that would come up?
Yes, let's say that they had already been doing work on a pipeline for the pipeline company, and the commission said, will you work on the siting application for this same pipeline? Absolutely not. That would never be allowed.
Well, I wouldn't. I think that's an overstatement, actually. I'll give you a real example.
What do you mean an overstatement?
Right now, they already are the engineering firm on Just Wind. Okay, which is a large wind farm that we have a letter of intent before us. If, in fact, that letter of intent turns into an application for a siting a siting application, of course, there would be right away the potential for a conflict. That's when we would you would have to discuss with them how they would, if in fact they would be the firm that we would utilize for siting, how they would split their staff to avoid any economic conflict or giving one client an advantage over another client. I'm not going to prejudge to say that they absolutely couldn't do it, but those that would be a scenario where we'd have to discuss how they may do it.
So you'd allow them to do essentially what the commission staff does in terms of having a wall between?
Well, I don't want to prejudge any specific situation because I don't know for sure, but that's one potential way that they would, which is why I'm saying Commissioner Weefall's statement, in my view, is an overstatement because I wouldn't necessarily say they could not. I mean, having geographic...
You would give them... I don't think we would ever give them the same siting if they're working on the pipeline for the company.
Well, I'm not going to prejudge any of those scenarios because I think that we've just issued the intent to award the contract and read their statement. And so until such time as individual situations come up, I'm not going to. Dale, a more likely scenario. I mean, one could argue here, and here is the problem. As soon as you start drawing bright lines before the fact is, okay, let's say that they're working on the a Plains pipeline project, but we have a siting for a Belfouche pipeline, and those two pipelines, one feeds into the other. Is that a conflict? And does that negate them from ever doing work on a pipeline and all of those? So I'm not prepared to draw any bright lines of distinction, other than if it's clearly an economic disadvantage or an economic advantage to one client over another, that would be a conflict, and we wouldn't.
I don't believe that my point was overstated.
Is it? Is it enough that you, the commissioners, know that they have this relationship?
Knowing means that then you make a decision based on that knowledge, and you use that knowledge to make the best decision you can. So, and I think we would consult, of course, our legal,
right,
staff, et cetera.
But what I'm getting at is that, okay, let's say that you know it's possible that they would do the siting for a pipeline when they have worked for the company that's building the pipeline.
Right.
Is their obligation to disclose that? But is that knowledge good enough? I mean, do you take that knowledge into account when making your decision? And is that good enough, or do you just say, well, because you have this relationship, you can't do this?
And that's my point. We often, even as commissioners, disclose potential conflicts for the very purpose of transparency, not to negate a vote or not to negate our role in something. And so in many cases, Dale, when what we're asking for after is technical expertise, that in and of itself does not necessarily constitute conflict in my mind. Truth is truth. We take the evidence presented by company engineers all of the time. It's in many cases the only evidence that we have. So that's why I do not want to overstate that working for a company that has an application before us automatically negates their ability to do work with us.
Well, I disagree with that, but while I'm on the commission, I will take a very close look at the projects and who's involved with who.
Same here. That's my point.
I mean, because your dad worked for Cass County Electric, does that mean you have a conflict of interest?
It is why I disclose that fact. And then we'll again when we do the Otter Tail Casconi hearing and ultimate vote.
But it's also why when my daughter worked for MCI that I took myself off of cases. Who does she work for these days?
Yeah.
Now she works for an engineering firm that has government contracts. It is, and I can't think of the name right now, but it is nothing to do with the work of the commission.
It's not KLJ, and it's not Houston. It's not ProSource, probably.
Okay, anything else? All right, thank you. That ends the items on the agenda today.
Tony, where are you?
Thank you, Tony.
Oh, see, I just want the record that Charlene has my authorization to sign.
Thank you, Tony.
Tony, where are you?
I am heading to Chicago. We're going to a Cubs game Friday.
I knew it.
And the name of my daughter's company is Rockwell